This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today, the story of King Records. Come on, baby. That's Hank Ballard with the original recording of The Twist, a song later made famous by Chubby Checker. Ballard's version was on King Records, an influential independent label that was founded by Sid Nathan, who ran it from 1943 until 1971. King also recorded the original versions of Fever and Good Rockin' Tonight. Not the most famous label, but this Cincinnati-based label was very influential. It launched the careers of James Brown, Hank Ballard, Cowboy Copas, and Freddie King. In a time of racial segregation, it recorded country, blues, and rhythm and blues performers, including the Delmore Brothers, the Stanley Brothers, Earl Bostick, and Ike Turner. Today we're going to hear the story of King Records from John Fox, the author of a new book about the label, Seymour Stein, the founder of Sire Records, who learned the music business at King, and Bootsy Collins, who was a studio musician at King, where he joined James Brown's band. We'll start with an excerpt of our James Brown interview. Brown not only got his start at King, where he became their biggest seller, his first single, Please, 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 was released in 1956 on King's subsidiary label, Federal Records. In our 2005 interview, I asked James Brown about Please, Please, Please. Now, I understand this record almost didn't get released. Your new book says that the owner of King Records, Sid Nathan, didn't want you to release this. What didn't he like about Please, Please, Please?
Well, it was repetition to him because I continued to say, please, please, please. And he heard me say, please, please, 26 times. And didn't ever, you know, had that kind of concept or that kind of music because it was like gospel ballad, you know. And he couldn't understand the pulsating bam, 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 please, please, please. He couldn't understand that. But that was a new horizon coming by him. He totally different from what he did before.
Well, I guess they made a mistake. So
I'm glad they did.
Please, 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 please.
Please, Please, Please on the King record label. King launched James Brown's career, and it's where bass player Bootsy Collins got his start at the age of 15. He was a King studio musician and then joined James Brown's band. He later formed his own group, Bootsy's Rubber Band. I asked Bootsy to share some King memories. Bootsy Collins, welcome back to Fresh Air. So you grew up in Cincinnati, where you still live, and where King Records was based. So before you even started playing at King, did you buy King Records?
Yeah. Well, actually, I probably didn't buy them because at that time we had a couple of friends over at King Records who actually kind of slid us a 45 or two, you know. So anything we kind of wanted, you know, we kind of, you know, asked him, and you know, he knew we didn't have any money. We was a band playing around Cincinnati, you know. Nobody really had any money at that time, so. It kind of, you know, gave us this, that, and the other, whatever we asked for.
Now, before you started playing with James Brown for King Records, you became part of the King house band. So
yeah.
how did you do that? How did you get that job?
Well, actually, we were we were like pissed over at King Records. We were always there. We were always wanting to see who was going into King Records.
Being you and the members of your band, including your brother.
Yes, yes, my brother and Frankie, the drummer, and actually later on became Robert McCullough and a guy named Chicken that played the horn. They came in later, but the rhythm section was the ones that started off, and that was the three of us. And so we started just kind of hanging around over there and just to see the artists coming in. We had no idea we was going to actually get a chance to go in King, you know, because they never let nobody in unless you were an artist and that you were performing and you were doing something, recording. So we were just kind of like fans, I guess you would call. Then we met this guy, Charles Sperling, who was the A&R guy over there at King Records. And he had heard about us, and he wanted to come and see us play. We had talked about ourselves so much, you know. And he wanted to come and see us. So he came to see us at a club, and he thought that we were great. He thought that we would bring a lot of energy to the new rhythm section that he was looking for. And so he invited us over to King Records. And that was the first time we got in King Records.
So what was it like when you got inside?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, from all that fighting to get in, you know, like, wow, we didn't know what to do with ourselves. You know, it was pretty amazing. I mean, it was one thing to see artists going into the studio, but to actually be in the studio and you see them and you hear them recording and putting songs together, it just took it to a whole nother level for us. We were in heaven.
So when you were in the house band and you were playing with different performers, what are some of the things that you learned musically by watching different kinds of performers by having to follow them, you know, backing them
up? I would have to say the main thing, I guess, was we went over there. I got to tell you a little story since you asked that question. We went over there and they didn't really know how much we knew as far as recording, and because, you know, they liked our energy so much and they liked the fact of how we made the records feel. So I think that kind of helped override what we really knew. So at some point they was going to test us. So the big test was, okay, let's put some music in front of these boys and see how they do. So one of the arrangers over there, who actually became James Brown's string and horn arranger, Dave Matthews, he actually put some music in front of us. Because before that, we were just kind of winging it, meaning we were playing what we felt to the song that they were doing. But I think they wanted to see, okay, can these boys really read, or how advanced are they? So they put music in front of us, and we kind of sit there, me and my brother, I never will forget, we looked at each other because we was saying to ourselves, how in the heck are we going to get out of this? Because, you know, neither one of us could read music. I mean, you know, and they sit it in front of us. And then we had Henry Glover there, who was like the top producer, and all of them was looking at us. We had this big orchestra in there, horn, strings, and we were the rhythm section. So it was like, oh, my God. So we were on the spot, and I said, come on, Cat, we can do this. And I said, Dave, can you run it down one time so we can see how it goes? So he ran it down with the whole band, you know, without us. And I said, give it to us one more time so we can get a real good feel for it because we want to do this right. He ran it again. We said, we got it. We played that sucker one time, and they took it, and it was a take, and they loved it. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, after, you know, grueling sessions like that, 2 or 3 weeks later, Dave pulled me to the side. He said, you know, I know you can't read. And I kind of looked at him and started cracking up, and he started laughing, and he said, I understood that you couldn't read in the very first time you you played that first song. He said, I knew you couldn't read. He said, but I liked what you did so well that it didn't even matter. He said, I want to spend some time with you. I want to at least teach you some chord changes and how to read chord changes, you and your brother. And that way we can get through this a lot easier and you won't have to feel so so crushed in these sessions. I said, okay, cool. So he took us to the side and started teaching us how to read chord changes. And that's how we made it through, those sessions.
Well, Bootsy Collins, thank you so much.
Oh, this is awesome.
Bootsy Collins got his start at King Records. We'll talk with the author of a new book about the label after a break. This is Fresh Air.